club football, he pisses all over him. So
yeah. It's just Messi. We all know what Messi can do.
A lot of flair, a lot of skill.
People might forget the names, but the streets certainly won't.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Whenever you're listening to this, welcome back to another episode of the FT LOL podcast. Today, we'll be diving into one of the biggest and best countries around in international football this century, and that is Portugal, as we'll be ranking the top 10 Portuguese players of the last 20 years. Joining me today on this one to help rank the top 10 is Hamza from the Friday Night Counterattack pod. How you doing, Hamza? You all right?
Yeah, I'm all good. I'm all good, Jack. Thanks for having me back on. We've got an episode of my podcast coming up in the next few weeks as well, which everyone from the love of this should be looking out for, because Jack's got some really good content on my channel. So I'm looking forward to hearing that back as well, which will be great. It's a really beautiful day at the moment. I'm enjoying the watermelon that I've got to eat. Sunny day, and Ramadan is around the corner for me. So I'm looking forward to having a well-deserved break from podcasting and from editing and all of that, and just focusing on relaxing for a good 5-6 weeks. So I thought I'd get one more episode in, and for the Portugal episode, for it to be something that we've talked about recently on our podcast, is fresh in my memory. So I'm looking forward to this one, Jack. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, I haven't got any sun where I am.
What? It looks sunny where you are.
No, I'm looking out the window now, and it looks like it could rain by the end of this episode. Yeah,
I've got blue skies and no clouds in my area.
Yeah, we've got a heat wave coming at some point, but yeah, hopefully we get weather a bit like Lisbon or the Algarve or something like that. That'd be nice.
Definitely, it's what we deserve, innit? Coming up in the
summer. Yeah. But yeah, you're a Man United fan, so you've seen your fair share of good Portuguese players and bad, I suppose. In Bebe, he's Portuguese as well, isn't he? Don't know if he's made your list.
Thanks for reminding me though. But no, good, great, and not so great on our list as well. So
yeah,
that's kind of it, really.
Yeah, and what we've done, we picked 20 years on this one because it was Euro 2004, weren't it, where they hosted their first tournament, and that's when they got to their first final. And I think, yeah, in the last 20 years is probably where they've been taken a lot more serious than, you know, the sort of 70 or 80 years before that. So, yeah, I thought it was a good kind of cut-off point, last 20 years. And what I've done, I'm kind of judging it on literally that time period. So there's a couple on mine where they might be higher up. If you look back, they did it a bit in the 90s as well, but you know, when we get into it at the end, I'm probably, you know, happy to push him up a bit and stuff. But yeah, how did you find sort of ranking these and coming up with the players?
Well, we all know who number one is going to be, so it's basically number one and everyone else in this as well. That's how I see it in the last 20 years. So yeah, everyone listening, there's no spoiler of what's going to happen, but we know who's going to be number one on the list. It's obviously going to be Pepe. But top five was quite easy for me because they were just names that rolled off the head. And then the bottom five was just kind of like with yourself as well. Were they better more in the 90s than they were in the last 20-year period, what we're talking about? Or do you focus more on the more successful teams that Portugal have had and the key players in those kind of areas and what they've kind of achieved? Especially the success in Euro 2016 as well. So lots to look at, but I'm going in the same, to make it fair, I'm looking in the same kind of way as you. There are some players who are great in the 90s, but they still played in the 2000s, but they're better days in the 90s as well. So I'm looking forward to this one. I'm looking forward to seeing who you've got on your list as well.
Yeah. So before we get into the 10s, did you have any honourable mentions?
No. All the ones I have, they're literally probably the only honourable mention I have who aren't going to make it on my list: Hugo Viana, Costinha, and Maniche. These three just annoyed the hell out of me when they're at Porto under Jose Mourinho in that 2004 quarter final or round of 16 when we played them away and at home as well. That's when I learned again, how dirty European football really is, with the time wasting, the fouls, with the influence in the referees. I saw it more against Bayer Leverkusen a couple of years before when we lost in the semi-final, but then as Zidane sorted them out in the end, which is great. But realistically, as those three, because they're not going to make my list because I don't want them on my list, but they were very good players from what I saw around that 2004 era, obviously, when Porto were European champions as well. So yeah, those three, Hugo Viana, Costinha and Maniche, they would be three players that I've got on my list. Not on my list, honourable mention.
Yeah, I've got Pauleta and Paulo Ferreira, my honourable mention. I would say that if we were doing this in sort of 10 years' time, there'd probably be quite a few like current ones that would be on there. You know, people like Cancelo and Jura and stuff. But I just think they've not done enough just yet. They're still fairly young, aren't they? Like 24, 25, stuff like that. So,
and you don't want to be a victim of recency bias as well. That's the thing.
Yeah, that's it. Although, to be fair, I'm more nostalgia bias, I think, if you've got to pick a side. But let's get into the 10. So who have you got at number 10?
Number 10, realistically speaking, my number 10 is someone who I quite enjoyed watching. He's quite a fun player to watch. And I think he's someone who, in a way, you can consider him a journeyman, but he was someone who football fans and street football fans really enjoyed watching on the pitch. He was quite enjoyable in terms of the way he would play. He has his own little signature move in terms of shooting from a certain part of the boot. But like you kind of said, he kind of made history by being in that squad of Euro 2016, but he hasn't really done all that much over the couple of years. But he has always tried to turn up for Portugal. And that is Ricardo Quaresma at my number 10.
Yeah, I know you was talking about when you said the signature move. I've actually got him at 10 as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. That's good.
Yeah, like for Portugal, he's actually done really well for himself. Like, he's one of their most capped players. He's, you know, he did come quite big in the Euros and previous World Cups and stuff. But yeah, just playing, because he just missed out on like the Porto, you know, when they were dominant. And
because he left around then as well. He left around then. He went to, I think, Barcelona.
Barcelona. It didn't work, and it was a big signing. And but he's a top, like, really talented player. Just, I guess he just preferred maybe being a bigger fish in a smaller pond or something like that. But
for everyone listening, if you never heard about this, when Ronaldo was signed by Man United in 2003, Sir Alex Ferguson also wanted Ricardo Quaresma at the same time, because there were links of buying Quaresma, and he was rated higher at the time, being a bit older than Ronaldo. Obviously than Cristiano Ronaldo. And people are like, oh yeah, Quaresma, it'd be a good signing. We haven't really heard of Ronaldo. But we got Ronaldo for the 12 million and we never got Quaresma because, again, like Ronaldinho that summer, he moved to Barcelona after being linked with a move to Manchester United as well. So that was something quite big. But like you said, he does like to turn up in these tournaments. I think he scored a really good goal in the 2018 World Cup against Iran outside the boot that you see every now and then on social media, which was fantastic to see. So I quite enjoyed seeing that as well. So realistically speaking, Ricardo Quaresma is a welcomed member to the list at number 10. What did you kind of enjoy most about Ricardo Quaresma when you saw him playing in these little tournaments as well? Because sometimes he would play at some of these random clubs like Besiktas, and he'd play in different countries where you never got to see him play on like Champions League or Europa League nights as well. So what did you kind of most enjoy about him, Jack?
Yeah, I think I just like the fact that he just played without any fear, really. And maybe that's because he was in these clubs like Besiktas and Porto and stuff. And, you know, when he went to like Inter under Mourinho and stuff like that, it didn't really work because it was more structured and stuff. And he was, for me, he was like the first, or maybe not the first, maybe Ronaldinho was the first, but maybe he's the second YouTube footballer, like the one that you would watch highlights of all the time on YouTube. And yeah, I don't know if people, nowadays would necessarily know him as much, but for us, when we were growing up, like, he was massive in that kind of YouTube era, I think, because he was a highlight reel.
For me personally, it's one of those things that when you enjoy watching someone play, is that more important than them actually delivering the numbers? Because a lot of people say, oh yeah, the numbers are more important, but football is a game that you watch with the heart more than just with your eyes and with your head, in a way. So you would enjoy watching Ricardo Quaresma play quite a lot as well. And I'm really a big fan of being able to watch him because I thought he was a fantastic player to really enjoy watching at the same time, which was, for me personally, I thought it was a great experience to watch Ricardo Quaresma play as well, personally.
Yeah, yeah. So we're agreed on that. So who's at your number nine?
My number nine, you may or may not disagree, but I'm going for someone who I've really enjoyed watching over the years, playing European football, then moved to the Premier League as well. He was a steady midfielder, he's played in the Champions League, played in the Europa League, had, I think it was over like 70, 80 caps for Portugal at the moment, a steady midfielder. And unfortunately, someone who scored against Manchester United this season when I was at the ground and I was leaving really upset because he scored against us. And that is João Moutinho, the centre midfielder who's previously played, obviously, in Portugal. He's played, he had a stint at Monaco as well. Mm-hmm. But you've always seen him in these tournaments for Portugal, who are a very defensive-minded team, like to keep possession of the ball, but they always have like three defensive-minded centre midfielders. And he was, for me, integral in that midfield battle against Wales in that semi-final in the Euro 2016. So I've got João Moutinho at my number nine. Who have you got in your number nine?
So my nine, and I've got Moutinho a bit higher, actually. Okay. But my nine is one, I didn't know exactly where to rank him, right? Because he did a lot of stuff in the 90s.
Yeah.
And he'd certainly be a lot higher if, you know, if you included that period. But you could also argue that maybe he doesn't deserve to be on this list at all from like 2002 onwards. But it's Rui Costa.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think
I've got him. I've got him a lot higher, Jack. I have to say, a lot higher than mine. Yeah.
No, I think it's his birthday today.
Oh, nicely done.
I think he might be 50 as well. But yeah, just he's another one. I love watching him play. Just kind of silky, I think is, you know, the word that comes to mind. Really good passer. Loved the long shot as well. And I kind of remember him most for, yeah, Milan, I suppose, and Fiorentina as well with Batistuta and stuff. Yeah, on his career, he's definitely, you know, a top five in the past 30 years, I'd say.
Yeah.
But because of the cutoff, I didn't know exactly what do I do with this guy. So I'll put him at nine, but I can definitely see the argument for him being higher.
I think it's more the fact that it was a dying breed from Portugal at the time because they hadn't qualified for the World Cup in France in 1998. They kind of scraped through their way in Euro 2000 as well. And that was when Figo and Rui Costa were kind of the main players at the time, the main attackers. Mm. With I think Pauleta was a striker as well. Maybe a young Helder Postigo, that maybe a bit earlier before his time as well. But you're kind of just there watching, like, this was again when individuals were taking more ownership of creating chances as opposed to having a system where everyone can look to create chances as well, as when the strikers were men who were like really tall, they'd have more meat on their bones in the way, so they'd be more up for aerial duels as well. But having a silky player like you said, like Rui Costa, seeing him, I think he retired in 2004 or something like that, seeing him at AC Milan.
No, it was later than that, but
did he retire later than that?
Yeah, he went to
from Portugal. No, as in, like, he retired.
Maybe from Portugal, yeah, because I can't remember him at the 06 World Cup. So yeah, he might have retired internationally then.
Because that was like with me as well. I'm just kind of there, kind of thinking like Rui Costa was someone I enjoyed watching, not so much at Euro 2004 when obviously Portugal beat England, and Rui Costa was obviously a big thing about that, against scoring against England. I didn't really like that. Again, Euro 2000, I think he did the same as well. But his goal, obviously, in the Stadio de Luz, that was heartbreaking for me. But he was a very good player at the same time. Really enjoyable player. And there'll be more people linking towards your side of the argument where he was a better player in the 90s than he was in the 2000s. But for me, seeing someone like that with that amazing strike that he had against England as well, at the time, obviously, I didn't appreciate it. As a kid, I was upset. But now you can appreciate, looking back, Rui Costa was a fantastic player. But for me, he's higher up in my list. But I get why he's at number nine in your list in the way, Jackson. That makes complete sense to me as well, which is great.
Yeah, he won because he was part of that when Milan won that Champions League in 03. And I think he was, at that point, Pirlo was not quite playing all the time, I don't think. So it was sort of him, Seedorf, Gattuso,
And Ambrose.
Because Kaká wasn't around, was he, as well? So Kaká
he just
signed,
so he was like a bench player as well.
Yeah, so he ended up taking Rui Costa's spot. But yeah, there was a point where he was kind of the number 10 or whatever, and that Milan side was awesome, like one of the best 2000 sides. So yeah, that's where I've got him. But yeah, I can understand why he's higher up.
Who's your number 8? Let me hear it.
So I've got Rui Patricio at number 8.
I've not put a goalkeeper on my list.
I've got a reputation of not really rating goalkeepers, but I think that's a bit unfair. I think he's just always been there. He's one of the most capped players, Portugal. Like, just reliable, a stalwart, we can call him. You know, he was big in the Euros, and when he came to Wolves as well, it was a massive shock. But I think in his years in the Prem, other than his last one, he was one of the best keepers in the league for a lot of it. And I think he's one of them goalkeepers that he is a leader from the back as well, which not all goalkeepers you can say that about, you know, more than just a sort of shot stopper.
Yeah.
He's an organiser and things like that. But yeah, just for what he's achieved, mainly for the national team, because some of his, I guess, career decisions that he made probably led to him having a bit less titles than he could have, because Sporting as well, like Sporting didn't win a lot. But yeah, he's, I'm not sure there's been a better Portuguese goalkeeper. Like, I think he's probably, it's going to be him or Vitor Bahia ultimately. But yeah, I've got him at 8 for his consistency over the last, whatever, 10, 15 years.
Rui Patricio, I just didn't put on my list because I thought there were so many bigger outfield players, but you kind of convinced me that I made a mistake there in the way, Jack, because Rui Patricio, especially in that, was it the quarter final against Poland in Euro 2016, where he was a keeper as well? They were drawing 1-1 and then they won on penalties to get through to Wales.
Yeah, they won the penalties, yeah.
That was ridiculous, because I'm just kind of there like, oh yeah, it's all about how Portugal can score, but Rui Patricio was a very good keeper that, again, I think he just slipped my mind in the way, to be fair, because I was thinking of more Ricardo, Victor Bahia, like you said as well, great goalkeepers that we've seen in the past as well. But realistically speaking, Rui Patricio is someone who should have made my list, but he didn't. But I'd like to see what he can do at Roma for the last couple of years as well, because goalkeepers obviously play until like their late 30s, early 40s, some of them as well. So it would be good to see him win a trophy of some sort. I thought it would have been good to have seen him in the FA Cup final, when Wolves lost to Watford a couple of years ago, and Watford got like obliterated like 6-0 or 7-0 by Man City. So I thought that would have been more of a fight to have seen Wolverhampton Wanderers win an FA Cup, or at least challenge for an FA Cup as well, which would have been great at the same time. But my number 8 on the list is Simão. So I put Simão as my left.
So that's another sort of honourable mention that I had. Yeah, I like Simão.
Simão was someone that I really enjoyed to watch. He was someone who was a very tricky winger to play with on FIFA as well. FIFA 04, 05, I remember him a lot as well. Playing for Benfica, playing for Portugal, especially at that Euro 2004 tournament. Him, Figo, Ronaldo were kind of the ones that were kind of there in terms of the main wingers at the time for Portugal. And it was great to see him play. But for me personally, I thought I didn't want to have him as an honourable mention because he's achieved a lot in the game. Again, gone to different countries and played different ways of football as well, which is great. But realistically speaking, do you have any kind of impressions on Simão when he went to Atletico Madrid? Because I thought he still could have done a lot more in terms of developing himself better. And I think he moved to Atletico Madrid a bit earlier than he needed to, if you know what I mean. Because he could have gone to a bigger team than Atletico Madrid at the time. With no disrespect to them, because they're now a really big team. But I think he went a bit too early and could have gone somewhere further, maybe the Premier League. He didn't really hit it off at Barcelona as well. So do you have anything kind of to add to that? Because I thought Liverpool would have been a great place for him to play, really, somehow.
Yeah, I think I definitely remember him most at Benfica. And I think he was in that team that knocked Liverpool out 1 year in the chat. I think he might have scored in the game. But yeah, that whole thing at Atleti was a bit weird. They had a lot of players that wouldn't have thought were any, you know, that good. But now you think, oh, blimey, they were some of the best ever. Like, they had like a young Aguero and
Forlan.
Young Torres and Forlan. And it's like, okay, yeah, you can kind of see why maybe they're playing a different system and not making the most of it. But yeah, he was, I suppose he was a bit of a less flashy but more reliable charisma in a way. Like, yeah, he did his business. He just kind of went about it a bit like Rudy Patricio, to be fair. I know they're different positions, but he's another one. Like, he did his business and, yeah, was kind of an integral part of the national team for a lot of years. But, yeah, I think Simão is another one, a bit like Quaresma, where he played a lot in the not the biggest clubs, as you've said, which maybe for his career he should have done. But at the same time, I don't know. You could look at that in a good way of, yeah, it's nice to see sometimes when you get these players that kind of don't just play in the top teams all the time.
Because the way I kind of saw it was he left Atletico Madrid in the 07-08 season for like 18 million euros or something, which is great. But that was also the same kind of season where Atletico Madrid sold Fernando Torres to Liverpool. So I was just there kind of thinking, like, imagine if Fernando Torres and Simão had gone to Liverpool. It would have been a brilliant setup for the next couple of years. And it's just the fact that with Simão as well, he was someone, like you said, it was a more reliable kind of player, more kind of winger as well. 80 caps or so, 85 caps for Portugal, 22 goals in the national team, which is great to see. And it's fantastic to really understand how Simão kind of, like you said, if you put it in that kind of context, he enjoyed more at these kind of clubs because he started at Barcelona. So when you start at Barcelona and not doing that great, you're kind of there just kind of thinking like, I don't want to go to another big, big club. Let me stay to like these other really good teams and then just carry on with it. So yeah, Simão's my number eight on the list as well, which is someone that I believe didn't deserve just a shout out, but someone who I quite enjoyed watching as well. So
yeah, Simão, I didn't realise he was at Barca. Was that?
He went to Sporting.
Was that the same time as Quaresma then? Or?
Around the same time, yeah. It was Sporting, then Barca, and then he didn't really hack it at Barca. He went to Benfica, and that's when we kind of saw him develop further as a winger as well, which is great. But yeah, that was my number eight. I think he did win the Europa League with Atletico Madrid. So I know we've just been saying he could have gone to a bigger club, but at least he won the European trophy. Great.
Yeah, that was against Fulham, wasn't it? That year that they did it. Yeah.
Definitely. Who have you got at number seven, Jack?
So at number seven, I've got Moutinho.
Ooh, Jean Moutinho, who I haven't mentioned.
Yeah.
So what can you add to Jean Moutinho that I haven't already, Jack?
There was a game that I went to, Arsenal versus Monaco in 2015. And he just dominated Santi Cazorla. Like, I've never seen him been dominated before because he just, similar size to me, but, you know, he's just got so much more tenacity and aggression and stuff like that. And yeah, I think that's why it works so well under Nuno, because I mean, I guess he's getting on a bit now, he hasn't got the legs, but you know, as well as being a top passer, he's just proper aggressive terrier type footballer, like, but also technical. So he can work in the Portuguese league, but he can work in the English league. And I think he's one that we're probably going to say this about, well, we've been saying this about a lot of the players so far anyway.
Yeah.
They could have done a job at a bigger team. And Moutinho, I don't know what he was doing staying in Portugal for so long, honestly. Like, when he was in Sporting, everyone was talking about him for years and years, but he went to Porto for some reason. He could have got into most teams sort of, maybe not necessarily starting 11, but in their 11 plus subs.
Yeah.
And yeah, I would have loved him at Arsenal, like, instead of Santi Cazorla, I reckon, or like as a replacement maybe when Cazorla got his injuries and stuff. I love that sort of player.
So how many have I got left? I'm on number seven.
You're on seven as well, yeah.
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I just have to get rid of one of these guys. Let's get rid of you. I've got like loads of people on my list that don't make the list. So my number seven, I'm going to go for probably lower than expected, to be fair, for a lot of people. But I'm going to go for Deco at number seven. I thought Deco was a fantastic player to really enjoy. He was a catalyst for the Porto team in 2004. Really great seeing him in Euro 2004 afterwards as well for Portugal. It was kind of before the likes of Xavi, Pirlo were kind of going through. It was more him, more Paul Scholes at the time at Euro 2004. Zidane, of course, was going through. It was a fantastic year, tournament for centre midfielders. So if anyone wants to go back and watch Euro 2004 highlights, go and watch Deco. He was a fantastic player to watch. And I really enjoyed watching and learning more about him as well, because he ended up moving to Chelsea. He's one of the players that moved to Chelsea at the time that actually kind of did all right. He didn't do the best he could have done. We didn't see the best of him at Chelsea, but it's still a good player to watch in the Premier League as well. He's just someone getting used to the different changes of managers, the different ways of playing at the same time, under different systems as well. And it was just the fact that with Chelsea letting him go a couple of years afterwards, it was just great to see Deco playing football where he really enjoyed it as well. And I really enjoyed him more than anything in the Portuguese national team as well. But Deco's at my number seven for me personally, Jack.
Yeah, I can see why you've put him there. I've only got him one higher. I've got him at six. So he was like arguably the best midfielder in the world for like a year.
Mm-hmm.
It's a strange one, yeah. Then he went to Barcelona. He won the Champions League, but he kind of lost his "I'm the main man" kind of thing, because he had, you know, the likes of Ronaldinho, young Messi and stuff. But at that time when he was at Porto, it was really exciting to watch. And that Porto team was very, as you kind of said earlier, a bit dirty and, you know, time wasting and stuff like that. And he was the kind of jewel in the crown, the one that wasn't necessarily like that.
And mm-hmm.
He played with skill and, you know, played the right way. And that Brazilian flair, really, because that's where he's from initially, isn't it? Brazil. But for some reason, they never picked him. So he ended up playing for Portugal.
Oh, my days. The fact that he could have been a Brazilian player, but he's playing like a Portuguese. He's playing like a Spanish guy, but he's from Portugal. I found that incredible. Because, again, he made everything that was 100 mile an hour, just everything looking slow motion the way he was playing. And it was just great that we got to see him win a Champions League at Barcelona before moving over to Chelsea. But for me personally, I'm just kind of there like, it was such a backward move for him. Because I think he moved because Scolari was the manager. And then Scolari got sacked.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it was just one of those things that, oh no, it's not going to work out well for him. Ancelotti came in. He didn't really prefer him. He'd be in and out of the team, which wasn't great. And then he moved on to Brazil. I think he went to, was it Fluminense? I think he went to play for Santos.
No,
might be Fluminense. Fluminense, as I pronounce it. But yeah, here's another one that kind of came through at Benfica, but didn't get a chance at Benfica, then moved to Porto. Again, did great for Porto as well. But it's more that Barcelona side, because he kind of walked so Xavi and Iniesta could run and Busquets could run at the time. Because that's when Barcelona tended to change their philosophy of how they're playing under Frank Rijkaard. He won the Champions League. He then ended up leaving. Then you had, obviously, the emergence of Pep Guardiola, where he put his faith more into Xavi and into Iniesta. Yaya Toure was on his way out. Deco was on his way out. And that's where the new kind of blood of Barcelona came and the emergence of Barcelona came from as well. So Deco definitely deserves a lot of praise for that. But for me, I enjoyed, again, like seeing him at Porto, like seeing him at Barcelona, probably more than the Portuguese team, but I really enjoyed watching Deco nevertheless. So yeah, Deco's in my list. I mean, now he's on your number six as well, Jack, so you can continue talking about him as well, I would say.
Well, yeah, I think, to be fair, we've kind of covered it. But I think what you've said there, he's a Spanish, I think that perfect describes him. He did play really like a Spanish midfielder rather than a Portuguese one. I think growing up, he started to change the perception of Portuguese footballers, probably.
Yeah.
In that they were seen as kind of the lesser of the is it Iberian, that region, countries. But yeah, when he sort of came over, it's when it really started to be Portugal of a real force as well in their own right. So yeah, he's... Yeah, but I think he was a little bit... He didn't have the longevity. He had a few years at the top, but not as many as some of the others on the list. So at your number six, who have you gone with?
Oh, my number six, Jack. My number six is number six is probably, I mentioned him before, but you mentioned him before as well, Rui Costa. So Rui Costa is my number six. So again, it's more, before people come and like try and shame us for what we're saying about Rui Costa, we think he's a great player. Jack and I think he's a great player. But our concept is over the last 20 years. So we're going from 2002 to 2022. So we're only looking at Rui Costa from 2002 to 2002 onwards. So the fact that he was a great player, we believe, we have seen, we appreciate. So the fact that Rui Costa is at number six, again, higher than what Jack did, is still fine, still great. But I know people are like, oh, he should be top three, he should be this, he should be that. I'm just kind of there thinking, like, over the last 20 years, he was better in the 90s than he was in the last couple of years. But Rui Costa was a fantastic player for me to really enjoy, really appreciate, and really understand in terms of what he did for the game, not just for Portuguese football, not just for European football, for the game in general. You'll be seeing, you don't really see it these days, but when you're in the playground at school, when the summer was on as well, playing in the fields and stuff, trying to recreate Rui Costa's amazing dribbling skills, his flair, his goal against England, is fantastic. And I really enjoyed that. And he's someone that, I don't have him as like a special player in my mind, but he's someone that you always like, if you were to meet him, you'd like fully like shake his hand, be like, well done, you're a great player. I'd appreciate to learn more about the way that he played the game as well. And you talked about YouTube footballers, about Ronaldinho and Quaresma. And I don't, it's not far-fetched to have Rui Costa as a YouTube player. If anyone's listening from a younger generation, have a look at Rui Costa. Look at how he played. I thought he was left-footed when I first saw him, to be fair, but he's actually right-footed. And he just shows how well he could play off both feet, which is great. But Rui Costa is at my number six. So it's kind of good that we've got some similarities, but it's much better that we have a lot of difference as well, because it's more to discuss for us as well, which is great. Have you said your number six, Jack?
Yeah, my number six was Deco.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so we've just gone intertwined it as well. So now we're in the top five as well, so this will be great. So let me start with my number five. People may have him a bit higher, but I've got him at number five, and his name, there's no beating around the bush, is Nani at my number five. I thought he was a fantastic winger.
Oh, mate, he's not in mine at all. I thought he'd be in yours because of the United connection.
Yeah, the United connection, and because he was also a winner at the European Championships in 2016. He was an integral part of that attack.
Yeah.
A very defensive side and a very unreliable attack minus a certain CR7. But Nani was someone who actually came through, because I remember watching a game against, rather than Netherlands or Germany in 2012, where it's like Nani, Quaresma, Postiga, Ronaldo, they were all on the attack. They were all counter-attacking. It was great. And you're just kind of there, like Nani's end product wasn't always there for Man United, but it tended to be at Portugal, which was great, because he had that leader in Cristiano Ronaldo next to him. And I really enjoyed that formation that they had in Euro 2016, when Nani and Ronaldo were just at strikers, and you had like four in midfield, João Mário as well. I think André Silva was somewhere there as well. Gomez, I think, was on the bench. It was more like Renato Sanchez coming in and out. And Moutinho, obviously, that we mentioned as well. But Nani is someone who I've always appreciated. And I've always said, if he wasn't Portuguese, he'd be a lot more highly rated. But because of those comparisons to CR7, because they're both Manchester United players, they're both wingers, and they're both Portuguese, Nani got a lot of discredit before he got his credit. So I probably could have been a bit more biased in putting him in my top three, but he's in my top five because I really enjoyed watching him play. He was a great player for Portugal. Thing is that Venezia now or something, has played in the MLS, has played across Europe as well. His captain's bought in Lisbon, so he went back to them and played in the Champions League, which is great. But realistically speaking, Nani is in my top five, and I've really enjoyed watching him play. And he's someone, again, that he had like his Nani chop that he would do. Mentioned it a couple podcasts ago about how he scored that. It wasn't really his goal, but the fact that he scored a goal where he like chopped inside Lel Clichy against Arsenal, then went on the outside, then just dinked Almunia or Manone or Fabianski.
Oh, yeah. I think it got given as an own goal, but it was basically all his work, yeah.
Yeah, he could create something out of nothing, which was fantastic. And that's something I really enjoyed about watching Nani play as well. And one of the greatest goals ever in the Premier League, Wayne Rooney against Manchester City, who crossed the ball, was Nani. So again, he could give you the goals, he could give you the assists. He's won the trophy, the European Championship. with Portugal, won the Champions League with Manchester United as well, won multiple Premier Leagues at the same time. So, yeah, Nani's on my top five, and he's starting it off in style with Nani at top, in the top five on my top five. But yeah, how is he not in your list, Jack? I'm surprised at that.
I think, yeah, he should be. Because even like if you look at someone like Quaresma, like Nani was obviously not as much of a flair player as him, but he did his work. The thing I hate about Nani is he always turned up against Arsenal. Like literally, him and Park Ji-sung, absolute nightmares to play against. Because, and yeah, I think if you have made a good argument, and I'm thinking to this 2002 kind of cut off, pretty much all Nani's work has obviously been since then. I think it's recency bias for me, which I didn't want to do, but in the other way is why he's not in my 10. But yeah, he should be really. I'm looking at a few players on my list where he should definitely be above, I would say, because yeah, he was at one point, I think, best player in the Premier League for this one season. Well, Gareth Bale won player of the year.
2011, wasn't it?
Half
of that season, 2010 to 2011.
Yeah.
And that Rooney was in and out of the team. Nani was like our main focal point of attack with Berbatov and Hernandez. So I thought, yeah, that's a reasonable shout as well, because that was when like all the other title challenges were kind of just fading away and Man United were the only ones staying consistent.
Yeah.
One of the most inconsistent players Man United had became really consistent in Nani. And that's a good shot. It's a very honest appraisal, I'd say.
I remember because like the player of the year nominees were like Nasri was on there, Bale was on there. I think Nani was on there too. And I thought, oh yeah, Nani's gonna win this because United have won the league. He's been their best player this season. And they gave it to Bale off the back of the Champions League campaign. But that shouldn't have come into the whole
Premier League
PFA voting, really. Like, I don't think he deserved it, but yeah, there's a couple of things. Yeah, recency bias and maybe the whole gets compared to Cristiano is why I've put him, well, not even on my list, but yeah, he should be, to be fair.
For anyone listening,
big one.
If you considered Nani a similar type of player to Ronaldo, you have to let us know. Comment on Jack's post when he puts it out for the Portuguese episode as well. We need to hear from you as well with that. But yeah, 112 caps, 23 goals for Portugal, European Championship winner as well. Fantastic player. And is at number five in my list. But who is your number five, Jack?
My five. We're getting into ones where I think you must have missed off a big one. And I've obviously missed off a big one in Nani. My five is Bernardo Silva, who I think might not be on your 10.
The thing is, I think I went too far away from recency bias to leave.
Yeah. Because he's the only one that makes it.
He would have been in my top 10, which would have been great. But I'm just kind of there like thinking, did I make a mistake leaving him out too early? Because I've also left out another Manchester United player who we haven't mentioned yet. But I think that's more of recency bias as well, because I'm looking at the players that have kind of done it for Portugal in these tournaments. Yeah. And I'm looking at the ones who have done really well for their country. And for me, Bernardo Silva is a fantastic player, fantastic system player. Was great at Monaco, really well done amazing to come back from more like other big money signings at Man City to continue being one of the better players and maybe one of the best players we've seen in the Premier League this season, which is fantastic. But when you saw him at Euro 2020 last summer, he went missing quite a lot, I thought.
Yeah, he hasn't done it for his country. That's for sure. Like, I don't think he was even in the Euro 2016 team. I don't think he'd quite broken through at that point.
Yeah, because he had this breakthrough season in 2017 for
Monaco.
Yeah, it's rather 2017 or 2016. I can't remember about that. But
it was 16-17 when they won the league.
Mm.
Yeah, I like the fact that he can play as a winger, and I think he's even better in centre mid. Maybe that's because of Pep's kind of
way he plays
style as well, but he was the one where I thought he just about had enough top seasons, because he'd had 2017 with Monaco, this season, and probably 18-19.
Yeah.
So he's got three seasons where he's kind of one of the best in his position in Europe.
Yeah.
which just gave me enough to say that's enough to get over the likes of like Rui Costa and maybe Deco, who had a similar maybe length of time. And then, yeah, the others in my list are more steady, didn't hit the heights, but did a lot longer kind of thing. But yeah, I just really like, he's one of the few players at City I actually like, to be fair.
He's a fantastic player, someone really enjoyable to watch as well. But I think it's more, again, he's been great, but I want to see him being great in a Portugal shirt. I want to see where he fits into this system under Santos. Is he going to be a winger consistently going forward? Is he going to be a centre mid? If he is a centre mid, is he going to be a cam? Because we know how they play with the two holding midfielders and Bruno up top. Where does he kind of fit into the starting 11? And realistically speaking, if he continues with his club form, kind of like with Raheem Sterling in a way, if he continues with his club form into international football over the next couple of years, Portugal will be absolutely fine in terms of going through the goals and assists, even if Cristiano Ronaldo does not retire, but he still isn't going to be the same man that we've seen 5-10 years ago as well. So realistically speaking, I may have missed him out, but I think you've done a really good, you've done him justice, to be fair, Jack, to put him into your top five as well, which is great.
Yeah, I think he does have to have a good World Cup though, because like, although Portugal will be fine maybe in the next couple of years,
yeah,
obviously the World Cup after this one's not for another 4 years. And at that point, Ronaldo would probably be done. Bernardo will be a lot older. Bruno's not young, is he?
26, 27.
Yeah, so he might be all right. And then, you know, God knows what will happen to like Cancelo and stuff.
Yeah.
He's got to have a big year, I think, a big World Cup in the summer. But yeah, of all the kind of modern ones, that's the one I wanted to put on there.
Brilliant. No, that's good. That's fair enough. Bernardo at your number five, Nani at my number
five. Yeah. I think we might have the same four, but the order might be different. So, interested to see who your number four is.
Okay, on three, say your number four. 1, 2, 3.
Ricardo Carvalho.
Yeah, Carvalho. Go on, Jack. Talk to me about Ricardo Carvalho and how amazing he was as a centre-back and how underappreciated he was, not just in the Premier League, but in world football as well, because he played for some really big teams and he was obviously one of those catalysts that Porto, when they won the Champions League in 2004 as well. So let me hear your thoughts on Ricardo Carvalho.
Well, the thing that really gets me with Carvalho is he was actually really small, like height and size.
Mm.
You associate the Premier League with these big kind of, you've got to be at least 6 foot, but probably like 6'1", 6'2".
Yeah.
Good in the air, you know, big. He wasn't like that at all, but it didn't matter. He was just, his defensive nous and his tackling and stuff, like, so good. Obviously, his quality on the ball as well, for centre-back in those days was great too. And the perfect complement for John Terry, I think. They worked really well as a partnership. One of the very best partnerships, I would say.
Conceived he also had a really 12 Premier League goals in a season, right?
I think 2004-05 that season, yeah.
Incredible.
He did have another really good partnership with someone else who's a bit higher for me on this list. So I haven't mentioned his name just yet, but
I mean, if the listeners haven't figured it out, I don't know who else you could think about from this list as well. So we won't spoil it. But yeah, Ricardo Carvalho was someone who I really appreciated. I think 89 caps, 5 goals for Portugal, which is great. Played in the Champions League consistently year in, year out. I've always said, and not a lot of people have agreed with me because he used to play for Chelsea, I've always said the £27 million they spent on him was one of the biggest bargains we've seen in the Premier League history of all time. At least top 5 biggest bargains. Even though it's 27 million, I thought to solidify your centre-back partnership for 5-6 years in the Premier League is something that nowadays we see a lot more. But at that time, in those kind of the ways that it was, Torre and Campbell, Ferdinand, he had a role in partner every other game before Vidic came in as well. Hippier and Carragher as well, but Carragher sometimes plays a wing. But when you're thinking of solidified partnerships at the time, it was rather Campbell and Kolo Touré, or it was Terry and Carvalho as well. And I thought that was fantastic. And it kept the whole team and the whole base of Jose Mourinho's Chelsea as strong as possible. And it was great to see Carvalho flourish in the Premier League. And when he went to Real Madrid as well, when he followed Mourinho over there, it was good to see him because they did play some exciting football together. He may not have won the Champions League when he was there, but I think he did win a Copa del Rey when he was there as well in 2010.
Yeah, he definitely won some in at Madrid. I think he might have won. There was that one season that they did win the league with Jose. I think he might have still been there at that point as well.
Yeah, 2012, I think it was.
Yeah, and the Euros, he played two or three games in the Euros too.
Yeah.
And that would have been, he would have been fairly big in the dressing room at that point too.
Big leader, three-time Premier League champion, three-time FA Cup winner. He won the League Cup as well, but... I forgot. You know, Porto, they won the Europa, the UEFA Cup a year before they won the Champions League. So all the players that we mentioned about Porto, Deco, Carvalho, all of them, they also won the cup, the UEFA Cup. So that's another trophy we missed out completely on that as well. So they're just littered in.
Well, I know that because I know there was some that joined like literally that year. Mm. I think Deco might have, but. Yeah, Carvalho would have been around for both. Yeah. And I think probably like Ferreira and stuff like that as well.
Definitely. But no, Carvalho, what a player. One of the biggest bargains I've ever seen in the Premier League history and someone who will never get the plaudits for what is done for defending in English football as well. Because, you know, you see footballers nowadays playing like him without realising they're playing like him because he was the template. He was one of the best templates you can follow as a centre-back as well, which is great. Mm. But no. I'll still never forgive him for that Wayne Rooney thing in 2006. But when you achieve so much as what you've done in the game as Carvalho, you kind of miss it out completely as well. But it is what it is. Mm-hmm. Jack, who have you got three? Let's hear it.
I might get real hate for this one. But I've got Luis Figo at three.
I've got Pepe at three.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of the two, but
yeah.
I think I know where you're going with this one as well, Jack. That's the thing. It's more like a goal in the 90s, and
yeah,
it was one of those ones. Let's hear that.
Yeah, I'd never rate Figo lower than Pepe if we took his whole career into account. But yeah, literally from that, I think even if you go to 2000, Figo's higher than Pepe. It was a coin flip. In 2002, which is where we sort of start the cut off, he still won the Champions League with Madrid. Still one of the first players I would buy on FIFA at this point in time. And yeah, still a superstar. One of the best players in the world. And even, you know, when he left Real Madrid and went to Inter, I think that time's underrated as well. He won loads of trophies there too. And yeah, a kind of experienced leader in that side. Third most capped player in Portugal's history as well.
127. Something like that, which is great.
Yeah. And I just love the guy, really. Like, he's not... When we talk about, you know, what we're talking about, playing the right way and not caring all about stats and things like that, that was him, really. And he was just that guy. Like, he didn't have the most pace, but he had the skills and he had the passing, the crossing. Yeah, really good player. And it's literally a coin flip between him being two and three.
Yeah.
And I've just gone with... The time scale is just a little bit wrong for him. Like, even if you go back a year or two and include his Ballon d'Or winning year.
Yeah, 2000, like wasn't it? His Ballon d'Or
winning. Yeah.
Yeah, because won the Champions League in 2002, which was great. He won the FIFA Best Player Men's Player in 2001. So, again, just out of time as well. Six-time Football of the Year in Portugal, but all of them were before 2002. Spanish champions only won the champions, the league once after 2002 as well. So, yeah, I get what you mean by that in terms of what it was, but it was just great to see him play, especially when he went to Italy as well. It was more easy for me at the time to watch Italian football than it was the Spanish football at the time because of that broadcast.
Was it Channel 5? They used to have it on a Sunday.
Channel 4. Yeah, which is great. So watching him... Four-time Italian champion as well, Inter Milan, which is great. I think they won it four in the bounce then as well, because that was when Juventus got relegated and Inter Milan had that points deduction, whatever it was. So that was great. But yeah, Luis Figo is at my number two. So I'm still going to just continue talking about how great of a player he was. And I still remember, again, 2002-2003, he scored a lob against Fabian Barthez in the Champions League against Manchester United. So I always remember that in terms of the fact that he just embarrassed. I think he embarrassed Gary Neville. And then he chipped it over Barthez. And then in the second leg, he got nutmegged by John O'Shea, which is quite funny at Old Trafford. But I always remember that. And I'm pretty sure John O'Shea will always remember that as well, which is great. But my number three is Pepe. So Pepe, I'm guessing, will be at your number two. But realistically speaking, Pepe was someone who was just an absolute monster, still is an absolute monster at centre-back for Portugal. He's been there and done that across all different eras as well, which is great. 20-plus years in the game. And he's someone that never gets revered and appreciated in the same way as the likes of John Terry or the likes of Nesta or the likes of some of these greats that we've seen before. And I truly believe he is one of the greats of European football, if not world football as well, because he's won the Champions League multiple times. He's been in part of some of these underdog teams, like, for example, Porto beating Juventus last season in the Champions League at 38 years old, literally just adapting his game completely year in, year out, which is great. But realistically speaking, how can you not want someone like that in your team? If you're playing against him, like I've experienced firsthand, you hate him, you despise him, you never want to be really appreciating him. But if he's on your team, you know he's going to be fighting blood, sweat and tears until he gets that victory for the team. He'll do whatever it takes. And I think us as English guys as well, we never really like that kind of player who likes to time waves, who likes to get into the referees' faces, because it's not in terms of how we respect the game and how we respect the officials. But for European football and Portuguese football, that's how it gets won. That's how you win tournaments and that's how you get trophies. And Pepe's way of winning trophies, he's just spoiled from trophies as well. Euro 2016 winner, of course. He was the main centre-back at the time, which was great. Portuguese Football of the Year 2014. Club World Cup winner twice as well with Real Madrid, which is great. Three-time Champions League winner, three-time Spanish champion as well, and three-time Portuguese champion as well. 06, 07, and then 2020 when he went back to Porto as well. So, and he was also part of that first team when Portugal won the Nations League in 2009.
Oh, yeah.
Which was good. But yeah, realistically speaking, that's kind of how I would rate, how highly I would rate Pepe. Hopefully this doesn't come as a surprise to people that you and I are rating Pepe very highly in our list, because I thought he was a fantastic player to watch. Still playing at the moment, still playing international football at the moment, which is incredible at his age. And the fact that people never really liked him, I quite like the fact that he would just carry on with his business, and the fact that he can continue playing that the way he did is such a really good professional to watch in terms of how to play as a centre-back, which is great. So I really enjoyed that person from Pepe.
Yeah. I don't know. People might be surprised because he just doesn't, for some reason, get the credit that he's due.
He's not a wow really player. He's someone that you would consider as like a meme player, wouldn't you? Like you'd see memes of him, but you wouldn't see like a compilation of Pepe's best tackles or clearances or last minute ditch defendings, would you? It's more like, oh, Pepe nearly got a red card. He's in the ref's face again, this, that, and the other. But you never see in terms of, wow, what a centre back he is. Because I think, wow, what a centre back he has been.
Yeah, I think he was the best player at the Euros 2016. And I think maybe he should have been on the podium in that year for the Ballon d'Or. I can't remember who. I know Ronaldo won it. I can't remember who else. I guess Messi was on there too. But yeah, the way you can just shut down strikers, and it's really difficult to play centre-back for Real Madrid and Barcelona, to be fair. Them sides in particular, because they play really high up, and you got to be comfortable on the ball, but you know you can be broken in behind potentially. So him and Ramos, like, they're both fast, both aggressive, and yeah, I love that partnership. And his partnership with Carvalho as well was a nice balance of, you know, he would go a bit more and Carvalho would stay a bit more and stuff like that. But yeah, it's not as easy, I think, as, you know, like the Juventus guys, the three, Bonucci, Barzagli and Chiellini, they're all great, but I think
they always get
easier.
More plaudits than
Pepe.
But Pepe's actually done it quite a lot as well, which is also fantastic to see.
Yeah, I would say he's probably better than all of them. He's certainly got a tougher job playing in Real Madrid than playing in Juventus with Buffon behind you as well. So, yeah, he just doesn't get the credit That is true, but he was always going to be top five in my list. So it was just, I think the top four was, you know, I was definitely going to have these guys as the top four, and it was just maybe the order, but I was pretty sure in the order anyway. But I thought, I thought you said at the start of the podcast Pepe was going to be number one. So I don't know what happened there, but who have you got at number one? Oh, I wonder.
I wonder who it is. But no, Pepe, I think the way I see it, Pepe is number one in terms of the footballers that we saw, the human beings that we saw in terms of from coming from Portugal. Because I'm always of that belief that Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi, they're the two players that have come from outer space and they've just played football to make it look so easy. So
yeah.
Technically, Ronaldo is my number one pick. He is someone who I can't speak more of. I've spoken about him a ridiculous amount of times since I've started this podcast. When he was at Juventus, I thought it was a fantastic initiative from him not to retire and to go to Italy and to really play a different style of football. The way he changed his body, the way he changed his body movements when he's playing, the fact that he's had that ridiculous knee injury since 2014, where he knows it will be struggling for him to walk afterwards as well. People never put that into account when they see him playing. And the fact that I've had that genuine pleasure of actually getting to watch him live as an adult now, seeing him play in some of the games that we've had this season, Atalanta, Villarreal, last-minute winner, the Newcastle game where he scored on his return for his debut against Brighton. He scored one of the best goals I've seen this season from Manchester United. But no, I don't know how many Ballon d'Ors he's won. I don't know how many Champions Leagues he's won. I don't know how many European trophies he's won, where he hasn't really been the main man. I mean, Ballon d'Or obviously have to be the main man, but when you think about how many times he has put himself in the spotlight against some of these amazing teams, against some of these big teams, against some of these big players, big personalities, and he shines above all of them. He shines above all of them to get the job done for his team, for himself, and to really be remembered in history. And nothing says that more than the Euro 2016 tournament, where he kind of dragged his team through the group stage. And then when he once he got through the group stage, it was more along the lines of, how can the team then kind of repay him back? Getting through on penalties against Poland was great. The semi-final against Wales, where they scraped through, I thought Wales could have really put Portugal more to a test. I think they kind of held it back in a way, personally. And then obviously getting subbed off against France after that little injury from Dimitri Payet. And then really just managing from the touchline as well. Because I thought it was, I know people are like, oh, he should have been sitting down. But Ronaldo was just, he was wearing his passion on his sleeve. The way he plays, he's always played with the passion on his sleeve wherever he's played, which is great. But realistically speaking, there are rumours of him leaving at the end of the season. If he leaves, I don't mind that, obviously, because if he doesn't get Champions League football, he will want to play somewhere with Champions League football as well. But at the end of the day, Cristiano Ronaldo, just an incredible player, has done it over the last 20 years because he's been playing for the last 20 years, but really came into the forefront 2003 when he moved from Sporting Lisbon to Manchester United. And some players would have retired by now. Some players would have gone off to different countries for a last-minute paycheck and to live a different kind of lifestyle as well. But 19 times has been the top scorer in a league or a tournament as well. He's won the Club World Cup four times as well. Five times Champions League winner, three times Premier League winner as well. The list will go on and on and on. But realistically speaking, you can tell I'm kind of speaking from the heart whilst also looking at however, what other things has won? Portuguese Super Cup in 2002. Didn't know that, to be fair. But yeah, realistically speaking, it's a great player that we've been blessed to watch in our lifetime as well, because a lot of people over their lifetime, they'll remember the one player or the two players or the three players. Everyone will remember Ronaldo and they'll all remember Messi. Whether they like them or they dislike them, they'll always remember them. And for me personally, being a Man United fan, who's got to see the development from Ronaldo from a young age to that silky, tricky winger, who, like we've mentioned it before, Simão, Nani, Quaresma, we've all done it, but he took it to another level, then another level, then another level, and then stayed at that top level for years. So Cristiano Ronaldo is undoubtedly my favourite and number one on my list of Portuguese footballers as well.
Yeah, no surprise that that is the same for me. I think you summed it up perfectly, really. When you do a list for the last 20 years, you're not expecting someone to be, you know, one of the best ever 20 years ago and still one of the best ever right now. But that is, you know, what he's like, give or take 1 year, say. But yeah, just unbelievable, really. So if we get to doing a joint 10, then I really like your Nani shout. So what I would propose as a top five is Cristiano, Pepe, just on the timescales of it, Figo, Carvalho and Nani as a top five.
Top five's good with that.
Okay. And
6 to 10, how are we going to do it?
And then we get 6 to 10, yeah.
Deco's got to be in there for me. Rui Costa. I know you've got your thoughts. Rui Costa could be 10. We could put 10 of Rui Costa.
So I'm happy Deco, because Deco was almost 5, to be honest, for me. That was the close one. So, yeah, we go him at 6. I think I had him at 6 anyway, dude. We both had... Oh, you and 7. Yeah, so we'll do... Yeah, we've got our top 5. We've got Deco at 6. Yes, we've got... And then we've got the likes of Bernardo, Moutinho, Rui Costa that are kind of fairly high on. And then we've got, I guess, Quaresma's on both our list as well.
Quaresma's staying on. I think, you know what it is? It may be a talk between Simão and Bernardo Silva for me. Quaresma's staying on for us. Deco. I keep saying Deco. Deco will stay on.
Dzeko can't be on this list.
Dzeko can change his nationality. Oh man. But no, I'm thinking more along the lines of who would we rather see play? Like, who would we rather enjoy play in that time scale as well? So if we have to leave out Simão, we have to leave out Simão, if we leave out Bernardo. I think you could put this as a poll as well on your podcast as well. Who would you rather see on the top?
Yeah. So what? So we've got our 6. Are we saying Moutinho and Rui Costa 7 and 8?
Yep. We both rated them highly, which is great.
Okay. Yeah. So we've got Quaresma at 9, and then it's a toss up between Simão and Bernardo.
I think we're for Bernardo because you had him quite high on your list as well, and Simão was just someone who I thought, you know what, is enjoyable to watch.
Yeah,
I'm watching a lot more than I have with Simão, to be fair. So
Simão was probably, yeah, he was definitely no invention for me. But yeah, if we go with that, then so our number 10 to number 1, number 10 Bernardo Silva, number 9 Ricardo Quaresma, number 8 Rui Costa, number 7, João Moutinho. Number 6, Deco. Number 5, Nani. Number 4, Ricardo Carvalho. Number 3, Luis Figo. Number 2, Pepe. And number 1, Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yes.
Good list. You're going to struggle to get a country to beat that in the last 20 years. Maybe if you're looking at kind of all-time players.
Yeah.
Portugal aren't quite at it. But yeah, certainly in the last 20 years, they're well up there, aren't they, with that?
And their future looks very bright as well.
Yes, it does.
Through Guedes coming through, Vitinha coming through, so many players coming through, Paulinho coming through as well. Nuno Mendes, obviously the left back. Ricardo Pereira's done very well. Diogo Dalot, not so much as of yet, but it'll be good to see more of them coming through as well from the younger players from Portugal as well. So that's something that your listeners can look out for as well, the young players coming through for Portugal. Big shout, I would say. Big shout. The podcast that we've done recently was a Portuguese-themed one on Benfica and the Portuguese national team as well. So it made sense to do this list whilst we have Portugal qualifying for the World Cup as well. And at this time of speaking, they're going to face North Macedonia, and we're yet to see if they've qualified or not. So it's football, and anything can happen, Jack. We've seen what happened.
Exactly.
Italy losing to North Macedonia.
That's it. Yeah, but really good episode. Cheers for coming on and your sort of Portuguese knowledge and Man United's connection as well always helps with this. And before we let you go, I know you've been on before, if you want to let the listeners know where they can find you.
Yeah, absolutely. So Friday Night Counterattack, you can find us on Instagram with the same handle. You can find us on YouTube where we have different types of content, which is great, where you can see us playing football. You can see us talking about our topics of discussion on our podcast, which is great. But yeah, find us on Instagram, find us on YouTube. We're also on Twitter, and I'll send Jack our Linktree link so he can pop it in the description. But that's where you'll see us most active, YouTube and Instagram. But everyone, thank you very much for listening to myself. Jack, I'll let you close out.
Nice one. Cheers, guys. Remember to keep it.